This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, we wanted to take a little bit of time to digest that AFC Championship game, so we're coming back a week later with a bit clearer heads, and I think the biggest takeaway from this game, other than that the Chiefs are by far the best team in the league, and we didn't need this result to remind us of that, but the Bills just played, I don't want to say played, but they coached timidly, like they were afraid, and they knew the Chiefs were better than them, and that, to me, was the biggest disappointment when the Bills were ultra-aggressive on fourth down and going for it and just trying to put up as many points as possible all season long, and then they totally abandoned that in a game where you have to score 40 points.
Right, and I don't even think using the word aggressive is correct as to what the Bills were. Right, all year, they were smart. They were smart all year. They made the smart decision. They made the highest win probability decision they could. And then against in this game against the Chiefs, three times in the game, they didn't do that. And one of them was like relatively debatable. Two of them were really bad decisions. So even if you want to say they made two really bad decisions, that's still two times where they didn't do it once all season before that.
Yeah. And I think if we've learned anything about Bean and McDermott, especially, is he'll take that criticism to heart and come back and hopefully not make those mistakes again, because his first year in Buffalo, McDermott was terrible with fourth down decisions in terms of the math behind it. This year, and even last year, he was really, really good at it, and for some reason decided that morale and those gutty feelings were superior to the math, and I don't think there's a scenario where the Bills win that game, given how the Chiefs played. It was the best game they played all year, and I just don't see a scenario where the Bills are going to win that game. But still, you've got to inspire some confidence that your offense can go out there and match them. And he didn't do that.
Right. The Bills hired a full-time analytics guy who had some sort of control or communication, at least on game day in 2018. And since then, the Bills have been the best or one of the best teams in the league at that type of decisions. So it really, not knowing 100% what happens behind the scenes, but just knowing that in and of itself, seems just like McDermott didn't listen to the math, like you said, Alex, just in that game, which it's understandable, I guess, in the sense where it's the highest pressure game they played in a long time. The first game in a long time, they weren't the better team, the more talented team, but you still can't be scared or make those kinds of decisions in that situation.
Yeah, so I think that's the biggest takeaway is hopefully McDermott learns from that and they come back next year and play like they did and make decisions like they did the rest of the season before that game. And I guess the second part is of this, the Chiefs are just that much better than everyone. Like, the Chiefs didn't play well the last 2 months of the season and they didn't lose a game. And apart from week 17 with their backups, but the AFC Championship game is the best the Chiefs have played all year. I mean, the only reason the Bills got a 3-and-out on the first drive is because Tyreek Hill dropped that deep pass. And then they scored literally every possession after that. Like, there is nothing the Bills could do to stop them. And I know some people were frustrated, like, oh, why can't they make adjustments? It's man, zone, blitz, zone, blitz. It did not matter. There was absolutely nothing they could do when Patrick Mahomes plays like that. And they have two guys on their offense that are completely unguardable.
Yeah, let's make it very clear. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback ever to play football in terms of how good he is at playing quarterback. He's not the most accomplished. You can't really call him the GOAT yet, but he's the best quarterback to ever play the game. And when he plays like that in that offense with those guys catching passes from him, it's almost impossible to stop them. And that it's just an acknowledgement of how good he is and how good the Chiefs are. Like, the Chiefs are this Chiefs team, the Chiefs the last three seasons really are all time great. Like, this is an all-time great football team the Bills lost to. It's not to say that the Bills don't need to get better, because they obviously need to get better. But it's just acknowledged this Chiefs team is all-time great.
And I don't think their defense gets talked about enough. They ended up finishing just outside the top 10 in scoring defense. And they played ridiculously well against the second-best offense in the league, I'd venture to say. And the Bills. The Bills receivers just didn't win in man-to-man coverage when they had opportunities. And I think you just have to give credit to the Chiefs defense as well for shutting down the Bills offense. I mean, they still scored 24 points. They probably could have scored more had McDermott been more aggressive, but they just flipped the game on its head with big plays with their best players, which is, Nate, what you and I have said all along. You just need a handful of really good players on defense that make big plays.
And the Bills just, the Chiefs play a ton of man coverage. The Bills were pretty good against man coverage most of the season. And they struggled against the Chiefs, playing a lot of man coverage. Like, no one got open. Diggs didn't get open. Cole Beasley didn't get open. John Brown didn't get open. Gabe Davis didn't get open. And we know the Bills had some injuries going into that game. Like, most of those guys weren't at 100%. But it's still, you expect the Bills receivers to win in man, and they didn't win in man coverage against the Chiefs.
And the offensive line did Josh Allen no favors. I mean, there's pass rushers crashing through the offensive line almost immediately. It seemed like nearly every play. So that makes it even tougher on the receivers to try to get open that quickly. And this was, you know, by no means Allen's best game or anywhere close, but I don't think you can blame him. I mean, he made a couple of bad decisions. He took some really bad sacks that put them in bad spots. And I expect, like McDermott, I expect Allen to learn from those mistakes. And, you know, you don't want to throw the ball away in a game where you know you have to score 35 or more points. But it's just, it seemed like nothing clicked, even though they were up 9-0.
Right, and I don't think Josh Allen didn't play great. It was one of his worst games this season. But I don't think it says anything about who he is. I don't think it changes my perception of who he is. Like, other than Pat Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, is there any other quarterbacks I'm 100% taking over Josh Allen right now? Probably not. And that's the same thing I thought before that game. It's the same thing I think now.
Yeah, and that's the reason. One of the reasons we wanted to wait to record this kind of end of season wrap up. You just don't want to overreact to what you just saw. And yeah, that was the worst game he played in a long time. But like you said, there's probably two guys that you would take over him. And, you know, having one game to win something. And I think the Bills learned there's kind of some things they need to improve the offense. And I think some sort of game changing, you know, speed threat that they see on the other sideline in the Chiefs, that's something they don't have. Like, John Brown's fast, but he's not a, you know, throw a screen to him and it's going 70 yards. Like, the Bills lack that in their offense, and I expect them to either draft a weapon that has that breakaway speed, or they go and try to find it in free agency or through a trade.
Yeah, that's really, if you look at the Bills roster overall, they're missing two things, one on each side of the ball. They're missing an elite pass rusher, like an elite pass rusher, that someone who is gonna get to the ball all the time, whether it's interior or a defensive end. And they're missing the speed on offense. Like, if the Bills fill those two holes, I think it's a completely different team. Like, yes, Jerry Hughes is close. You can argue he's an elite pass rusher, but he's not an elite sack guy. He's not gonna get you. He's not a guy who gets 10, 12, 14 sacks a year. He's close, but the Bills need a guy that can do that, and preferably a guy who can do that in the inside of the line, because the Bills, they just need to get, I think, really, they need to get tougher on the defensive line and offensive line going forward.
I think that's right, and Jerry Hughes, I think you're right, he's a very, very good pass rusher, but if he's your best player on your defensive line, and it's not really close, your defensive line's not very good. And the Bills, I think, spent more in terms of cap hit on their defensive line than any team in the league. So that's something you really have to consider. They're going to have some cap trouble in terms of retaining guys they want to keep. I think there's a pretty good case to cut Vernon Butler and Quentin Jefferson or Mario Addison, like some combination of the two of those three, because they just simply aren't worth what they're being paid. Like, I don't see how anyone can make the argument that any of those guys is even close to value at what they're being paid.
Right, and given also the Bills have to start with Tulane's coming back next year, and they can't really get out of that contract, so that's an extra $10 million they have to pay. Those guys probably aren't going to be on the team next year. And it's not, regardless of that, it's not something that I think should even be a close decision. The Bills didn't get enough out of their pass rush. They can afford to get out of these contracts from these veteran guys at the $7, $8 million a year level. And they can go find guys that are a little bit cheaper who are at least as good or better. Because if at least as good, but half the price is better.
Absolutely. And AJ Epenesa, I think with a full off season, hopefully can step into starter level snaps opposite Jerry Hughes. And, you know, maybe the Bills swing big and try to get a big time pass rusher on the other side of Jerry Hughes, because Hughes can still play. He's still playing at a very high level. The Bills could save a lot of money by cutting him. I think that would be very dumb to cut your best defensive lineman, especially when you have three others that are nowhere near value. And like you said, Star Latulele is coming back, which I think will help them, hopefully. I mean, he's had a year off from football and he'll be like 31 years old, so there's no telling how good he'll be coming back, but he'll certainly help on those early downs. But I think the number one priority for the offseason has to be bring back Matt Milano. If they don't bring back Matt Milano, I just would question that decision very much so. Like, how do you not bring back the guy that was very clearly your best player on defense this season?
So I've had some time to think about this, and I think it's a little bit more nuanced than we've said before on the podcast, because if you think about long-term money and you think about who, if you have to pick one of two guys to sign long-term, who are you going to sign? Whether if in the two guys are Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, if you have to pick one of the two right now, one of those guys is going to be about to play his age 22 season. One of those guys is age 27 season. I think there's an argument that you pay Tremaine Edmonds, because Tremaine Edmonds, while he's not an elite middle linebacker, he's good enough to pay, and he can is a guy who I could see being a very good edge rusher as his career continues. I think in being 22 years old, you pay him until he's 27, then you pay him again one more time, and he's only 27 years old. Like, Milano's already 27. And if you have to pay one or the other, I think I'd pay Tremaine Edmonds, but I really do want the Bills to bring back Matt Milano. I think they're going to figure out how to do it, but I don't think it's like Matt Milano over Tremaine Edmonds right now, 100%. I don't think that's necessarily the case.
See, I'll disagree slightly here. This game, to me, was kind of, that really put a spotlight on Tremaine Edmonds and how much of a liability he was in coverage in that game. It seems like Tremaine Edmonds' feet are attached to the quarterback's eyes. And what I mean by that is, obviously Mahomes is the best we've ever seen do it, but he was just pulling Edmonds off of his spot in zones, and just Travis Kelce is wide open behind him because he's moved away from where he's supposed to be. I mean, I don't know what the play calls are, but it certainly looked like Edmonds was being manipulated all over the field by Patrick Mahomes. And Milano, yes, he's, you know, 4 or 5 years older. I think he's that much of a better player, especially in coverage, compared to Edmonds. But I do think you're right, Nate, that Edmonds could transition into a pass rushing role, given his athleticism. And I don't know, maybe that's something they're willing to try.
Yeah, either way, it's something the Bills could try, because they have Edmonds at a pretty decent value for two more years if they want it. It's just they have to decide about his option. And I think you take the option at this point, because you're it's cheaper than you're probably cheaper than what he's going to get on the open market. And I think whether he's playing middle linebacker or as a pass rusher, he's a good enough player to have on your defense. And I think we saw as the year went on, when the Bills lined him up outside the tackles a lot, and he was a lot better doing that. I think that's more of the role he needs to have in a defense going forward. But he can still play middle linebacker, but I don't think he's like a true every snap four down middle linebacker.
Yeah, I think the Bills may almost have to kind of get in the mindset of, you know, not so much positionless, you know, back seven, but almost in a way, like, he's not a true middle linebacker, like you said, Nate. And Matt Milano is not even necessarily like a true weak side linebacker. He's a converted safety. And in a league that's trending more and more towards passing, like, you may have to get creative. All right, third downs, we're going to use Tremaine Edmonds as a pass rusher, and, you know, we'll find someone else to play coverage alongside Matt Milano in the middle. I don't know. I mean, we saw how the Chiefs just completely dismantled them. You got to try to start figuring something out, because Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce probably aren't going anywhere, and Kelce probably has at least another year or two of being an elite tight end left, so you have to figure something else out to try to stop them, because they didn't do it after the first drive. They scored literally every possession.
Right. I think the key, and this is going to be the future of the NFL, I think, is defenses are going to be playing a lot of like four safety alignments, where you have your two standard safeties, but you have two other guys who are basically safety hybrids. Milano counts as one right now. You have another guy who does that on the field. If you have four of those guys in the field at once on passing downs, that's going to give teams, I think, going forward, the best chance to win. And you look at what teams are bringing into their, the Chargers have a guy that does that. The Chiefs have a guy that does that. The Cardinals have a guy that does that. Like, teams are starting to figure out that you need a guy to do that. The Patriots just drafted a guy to do that. Like, you need a guy that can do that on your team to succeed in this passing league.
Right, and the Bills probably would have drafted that guy that the Patriots drafted had he not gone before them. And I don't know, maybe that's something they can plug Saran Neal into, because I think Saran Neal's a pretty good player. This defense just has so much talent at defensive back that he doesn't really see the field on defense all that much. And I don't know, maybe you figure out a way to get Jaquan Johnson on the field, because I think he could be a really good player. It's just he happens to play behind maybe the best safety tandem in the league.
Right. It's like, my argument is, for this season, is it not better to have taken one of Quentin Jefferson off the field, left Tremaine Edmonds out to just pass rush, and brought on one of those guys as an extra pass coverage guy? Like, would that not have been better given the production from the defensive line this year? That's kind of, I think that's the future of this defense. I hope that's the direction they go in.
Yeah, and it sounds a bit off the wall, but I think you have to be ahead of the curve in figuring out how to stop the Chiefs, because you're not going to stop it by getting better players than them. That's just not going to happen in a single offseason, where you're going to have some tough decisions to make against the cap. So, Nate, anything else you want to touch on this game specifically before we get into kind of the what to watch for in the offseason, what we want to see them do?
I think we kind of hit on everything we want to hit on that Chiefs game. I think that kind of easily segues us into what the Bills, we think the Bills should do, because the Bills' goal needs to be going forward. Yes, it's win the AFC East, but it's beat the Chiefs.
Right, and that's the challenging thing going forwards. You want to maintain a team that can beat the other three teams in your division for five or six wins every year. Yeah, you know, there's going to be some fluky losses, even though they're better than those three teams. But you also have to build a team that can beat the best team in the league, you know, and they kind of still have a window for another two or three years. So I think offensively, I don't know what you do on the offensive line. Like, I don't think Mitch Morse is fitting what they want to do with an offensive line. He's not great in one-on-one matchups. They seem to really like John Feliciano. So maybe they move him to center, cut Mitch Morse to save a bunch of money on the cap, and then slot Cody Ford in at guard, leave Ike Bucker there at the other guard spot, and maybe sign back Darrell Williams. I don't know. But it seems pretty clear that Cody Ford, they consider one of their best five, based on Brandon Bean's comments in his end of season press conference.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I think Mitch Morse is tough to move on from this year. I mean, yes, you save a little under $5 million moving on from him this year. But you save almost $10 million if you just wait a year. And I think unless they really need the money, he's worth a $10 million cap hit to play at his age 29 season this coming, this 2021 year. Unless you really need to, the money, or you can find something that you know is 100% an upgrade, I think it's still worth paying him what his cap hit is for one more year. I think it's going to be hard to build a better offensive line than they currently have without him on the roster.
I think that's a good point as well. Like, Mitch Morse hasn't lived up to this contract in terms of, you know, they made him the highest paid center. He hasn't been the best center in the league, but there's not that many really good centers. I mean, he's still probably a top five, top 10 at worst center. And like you said, like you're not going to go find something better or anything really close to it. So yeah, maybe you kind of suck it up and keep paying him for one more year. Then the question for me is, what do you do at right tackle? Because like I said, I think you have to keep Matt Milano. Like, that defense has a massive hole without Matt Milano. So do you value Darrell Williams in a one-year prove-it deal? Do you want to give him a long-term contract? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing is the Bills are going to be really right now with their current contracts going into what the projected cap is for next year. They're going to be really close to being over the cap before they even go into free agency. It's going to be really close. I think they're going to be just under, but they're going to have to cut a bunch of guys or a few big names to sign anyone. And this is not going to be a free agency like the Bills have had the past couple of years. They go make a couple splash signings. They don't have the money to do that. They have to, if they want to keep their own guys, like keep Matt Milano and keep Darrell Williams, they have to get rid of some of the guys they just signed.
Right. And like I said, I think it is easy to justify cutting two of the three of Addison, Butler, and Jefferson, especially because you're going to have Latulele back anyway. So there's someone that's the odd man out on the interior right away. So I think that's an easy spot to pick up at least 10, 12 million right there from cutting two of them. And then I think John Brown is going to be the odd man out here in the wide receiver room. Like, Gabe Davis proved he can be, you know, your third wide receiver in three wide receiver sets. I don't think John Brown's game is going to age well. I mean, he's a guy that relies on his quickness to get open, and, you know, he's starting to have those injuries pile up. He had a great year in Buffalo as the number one before Diggs got there. And he had a pretty good first half of the year before he got banged up. But at this point, is it worth paying him $9 or $10 million? I don't think that's value at this point, especially when you consider what they have on the roster behind him.
Right. And I think Gabe Davis can fill in that number three role pretty easily. And the Bills probably go get another wide receiver on top of that, whether it's drafting one or they have a guy from their practice squad this year that comes back into the fold. But between John Brown and Quentin Jefferson, Vernon Butler, the Bills can save $22 million just with those guys. Almost $22 million just with those guys. That is easily Matt Milano right there. And it might be Matt Milano and Darrell Williams, or close to Matt Milano and Darrell Williams, just right there with those three guys.
Right, and there's always the potential the cap can come in higher than that floor. I think it's widely expected to be higher than that floor of 175, but we won't know for sure for a little bit here. So, I don't know. And then offensively, like I said, they just lack that, you know, guy that can just turn a game on its head with one play. And I know some people want them to take a running back at 30. I think that would be a huge mistake. Like, first-round running backs just aren't worth it anymore. Zach Moss can be your guy to move the chains 3 or 4 yards when you need to run, but I think it's pretty clear Devin Singletary isn't it. Like, what does he do well? He makes a guy miss in space laterally once, and then he's not quick enough to get away. He's not a great pass protector, he's not a great pass catcher, and he's not a between the tackles guy. So, like, what does he bring to this offense at this point? I don't know.
Right, I agree with that. The Bills need the big play guy. They need, like, a reincarnation of C.J. Spiller or something like that. And I think if you're going to draft a running back at 30, it has to be a guy who's not really a running back. Like, they played running back in college, but they're really in the NFL. They're like, they could do a bunch of stuff. The only acceptable quote unquote running back I can see at 30 is Travis Etienne, because I don't see him being a running back in the NFL. He's going to be a slot receiver, running back, return guy. Like, he's a guy he's going to be in the NFL to get in space and go have fun.
Right. And like you said, CJ Spiller would be perfect for this offense right now. And this is like my crazy pipe dream of a trade that the Bills probably can't pull off if they want to keep Milano and Darrell Williams. But New Orleans Saints are in salary cap hell. They're like $100 million over the cap for next year. They're probably going to have to cut 9 or 10 of their top 15 paid players. And frankly, they're probably going to be pretty bad, because who's playing quarterback there? They have to cut a bunch of talent. I would see what it would take to get Alvin Kamara. I know we say don't pay running backs, but Alvin Kamara isn't really a running back. He's a wide receiver, and he has that game-breaking potential. That's my like crazy give-it-a-shot type of trade.
Oh, and so when you mentioned this to me the other day, I went and looked at like the Saints salary cap and what they're going to have to do. And if Drew Brees doesn't retire, the Saints are going to have a hard time figuring out how to get under the salary cap without cutting like their top 10 highest paid players. Because Drew Brees not retiring, if Drew Brees retires, they can save an extra $25 million, which is like a quarter of what they're over the cap right now. And then they can cut 6 or 7 guys, restructure a couple contracts, and they can probably figure it out. But if Drew Brees comes back, unless he voluntarily takes a massive pay cut, they're going to have a hard time.
Yeah, and I know, like, they just signed Kamara to a huge contract, but even if they do cut, or Drew Brees does retire, like, they still have to cut some talent. Do you want to keep around a running back for $15 million a year with an offense that's not very good and a team that's probably not going to be very good? Or can you try to get some assets for him? I don't know. Like, Nate, what would you trade for an Alvin Kamara? I would give up at least a second-round pick. I don't think I'd give up the first-round pick, but maybe a second and then, like, a third or a fourth the next year?
I think it depends on what you see Kamara as. Like, you have, everyone's going to value him differently, but like if you, like you and I, we see him more as a receiver, especially long-term. Like he's like a Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara. They're in similar vein where they're more receivers going forward, and they're on for a receiver, they're on relatively cheap deals. Kamara is, I think, till his last year of that contract. It's pretty cheap for a receiver. Yeah, I value him as that. I might give up a first round pick for him. And if them and the Bills, they're giving up their first, you can give a first round pick for Kamara. You're getting a 26-year-old wide receiver in his prime for 4 years at relatively cheap money. It's like a Stephon Diggs trade. Just, I'd do that.
Right. And he doesn't have the type of mileage that someone like McCaffrey does, because he's never had more than 200 carries in a season. He certainly wouldn't have that role in Buffalo. Hell, I wouldn't give him more than 6 or 8 carries a game if you pair him with Zach Moss. Just line him up in the backfield, split him out in motion. Good luck trying to figure out where the ball's going when you have Josh Allen that can take off with it. You have Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, Dawson Knox, Gabe Davis, Alvin Kamara all on the field at once. Like, good luck. Like, that to me makes this Bills offense even better.
It definitely does. The one thing that is detrimental to that happening, I guess, is that Kamara's cap hit in 2021 is only $5 million. It doesn't go up to $15 million until 2022. So that's the one. Getting rid of him doesn't help them right now. It helps them long-term, for sure. And they're still, 2 years, the Saints still have cap problems with if they don't cut a bunch of guys. Like, it's a two-year process they're going to go through to get out of this. But it's not an immediate help to trade him.
Right. So obviously they have to be willing there. But in terms of the Bills taking on that cap hit, that barely does any damage to the Bills cap in 21, where they're in a bit of a tight situation. So I don't know. That's the thing. If the other team's willing to dance, I absolutely pull the trigger on that. Because I know we say don't pay running backs, but Alvin Kamara, it's the only quote-unquote running back that I think I would pay, because he doesn't have that type of mileage on him.
Well, that's the thing with the like running backs now, is there are a lot of quote-unquote running backs who aren't really running backs. And those guys are their value is a lot higher long term. They might not all be superstars, but it doesn't matter. Their value is higher long term than anyone who's just a running back. Like, that's the future of the league. Like, a Devin Singletary or Zach Moss, who's just a running back, there's no, you don't have any value really beyond your rookie contract. You have to be able to be a wide receiver too.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You think of guys like James White, Darren Sproles, that were able to have really long careers. I mean, James White's still playing, obviously, but they just don't get hit as much, and they're used in different ways where you're not just running them straight up the middle. So, I don't know. That's something to entertain. That's a interesting pipe dream that I thought of. So, I think we've kind of highlighted the guys the Bills can cut. I don't know if we missed any, but I also think they have to figure out who their backup quarterback is going to be. I don't think they're bringing back Matt Barkley. So it's going to be an interesting offseason to see just how aggressive they are in keeping their own guys and if they're still able to swing something semi-big to try to improve the offense or defense if they try to go after a big-name pass rusher.
Yeah, I think a big part of all this is going to be like where this quarterback market ends up before free agency really gets going. We've already seen a couple big moves in the quarterback market. I mean, with Matt Stafford just getting traded to the Rams, and there's going to be more movement. And Jameis Winston now has a ton of leverage, I think, going to free agency. Like, someone's going to pay him. Like, look at what Matt Stafford's worth. Why would you not pay Jameis Winston instead of a lot of the guys that are there around the league? And when that all shakes out, some teams aren't going to have a lot of money left to spend. And that's going to, I think that market needs to kind of get settled before a lot of other stuff gets going.
Right. I think it's something like almost half the league is currently over what the projected cap is. The cap's probably going to come in higher than that. But yeah, there's a lot of teams that are going to have to be cutting salary cap instead of adding guys to it. Now, you look at teams like the Colts and Jags, who have a ton of cap room, can bring in multiple stars on huge contracts. That's fine. Like, as long as I think the point is they might be able to find some value in terms of what they're going to pay a guy. Like, maybe a guy like, they don't even need Corey Davis, but if Corey Davis kind of slips through the cracks and you only have to pay him like $8 to $10 million a year, I'd certainly think about it.
Right. And right now, like you said, Alex, I think it's 18 teams are over the projected cap right now, and 25 teams are within $10 million of it. Now, that's not probably going to be, like you said, the cap. It's probably not going to be the cap. The cap's probably going to be closer to $190 million, something like that. But that still puts 14 teams over it going into the next season. Like, there's going to be teams shedding money, and there's not going to be a lot of money to spend.
I think there's also an opportunity there with the team shedding money. Maybe you can pick up a guy that gets cut on a much cheaper deal than what he's getting paid currently. So maybe you can plug some holes with some decent veterans. And that's kind of what the Bills did on the defensive line last year, except they overpaid for what those guys bring. So, I don't know. It's an interesting challenge. And I think the other key point we should make here is please root for Deshaun Watson to get traded into the NFC. Like, there's already enough good quarterbacks in the AFC, especially with Trevor Lawrence likely getting added to the mix. Like, just keep it Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes at this point. Keep Deshaun Watson out of the AFC.
Right, and I mean, there's really, if I'm any team other than Chiefs, Packers, Bills, is there anyone else? Seahawks probably, Bengals. Other than those teams, is there anyone else that's not at least asking about Deshaun Watson?
It'd probably be negligent to not ask if you're not one of those teams.
Right, and that's... Deshaun Watson's that good. We don't want him in the AFC East. We don't want him there. He's a top five quarterback in the league. He's less than under 25 years old. We don't want to play against him for the foreseeable future. Like, yeah, please trade him to the NFC.
Right. If you look at the AFC East right now, the Bills should continue dismantling this division next year and the year after if none of those teams get Deshaun Watson or a game-changing quarterback. Like, that just doesn't exist right now. And that's the easiest path to being a top two or three seed every year is having three teams in your division you can kick the shit out of.
Right. And that's what the Bills should be going forward. Like, if the Jets and Dolphins go into next year with Darnold and Tua as the quarterbacks. Like, that's what I expect to happen again. And the Patriots have, even if the Patriots have Jimmy G, which it looks like they might try to swing something for Jimmy G, who knows what's going to happen with that. But if the Patriots, even if they have him, Bills still, that's the Bills still win the division with that. That's the, this is still the Bills division. If Deshaun Watson's in the AFC East, it's a different story.
Right. And Jimmy G does not scare me. I mean, move him into the AFC. He might be one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the AFC.
I mean, the AFC right now has a lot of elite quarterbacks. And if you include Deshaun Watson, I mean, you have Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence, soon to be Sutton, Patrick Mahomes. There's a lot of guys. That's more quarterbacks than playoff teams. So one of those quarterbacks is missing the playoffs every single season.
Yeah, and that's where the key becomes, you got to win your division. Like, to be in there every year, because there's not going to be enough playoff spots, like you said, Nate. And maybe a team like Denver gets in the mix for Deshaun Watson. I can live with that if Denver goes for Deshaun Watson, because, you know, that gives Patrick Mahomes a bit of a headache twice a year, and maybe it gives the Chiefs an extra loss they wouldn't normally get. So I think it has to be, all right, Deshaun Watson, please go to the NFC or the AFC West, so that you can load up three good quarterbacks in that division and keep it at one in the AFC East.
Right, and that's really, and they aren't going to trade him to the AFC South, so that's kind of, I think, probably out already. And the AFC West, not a bad place to go because Mahomes exists. So, but just keep him away from the Jets and Dolphins. I really don't see the Jets making a play for him. The Dolphins, I think, are more likely to, but I still think that's kind of a long shot.
Right, and if they were able to get him, I still think the Bills can put up points at will. I mean, they put up, 87 points on them in two games? Like, sure, okay, get Deshaun Watson, we'll still score more points than you, because the Dolphins offense still isn't there unless they go get Deshaun Watson and probably another weapon outside of Devontae Parker. So I think, to summarize things here, it's going to be a difficult offseason for the Bills in terms of hard decisions to make, but they are the second best team in the AFC and probably the whole league until someone proves otherwise.
Right. That's where I'm at too, Alex, is the Bills are the second best team in the NFL right now. And it's arguable if you want to say they're the third or fourth best. That's arguable there. But we're talking this best for next year, not right now. Like right now, yes, fine. Argue them as fifth, whatever you want. But for next year, given the uncertainty with the Buccaneers, the uncertainty around the Packers situation, the Bills probably are the second best team going into next season. Now, can that change in the offseason? Yeah, but the Bills are in really, really good shape.
Yeah, so, Nate, anything else you want to add before, you know, probably come back in a few weeks and start doing an off-season preview?
Yeah, we got to wait till, you know, post-Super Bowl free agency, get closer to free agency opening officially, and it's nothing, I don't think a lot other than quarterback movement, which could affect the Bills, but not a lot else is going to happen in the next few weeks here.
Yeah, so that'll bring us to an end of this episode of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I'm your co-host, Alex Pollinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe, download, give us a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. Follow us on Twitter at Bills_breakdown, where we'll be keeping our off-season thoughts as these crazy trades continue to happen with quarterbacks. And you can send us any questions, comments, feedback to BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.